Good afternoon. My name is Patrick Delaney. I'm the Policy Communications Director for the American Soybean Association. And with me today are ASA's President, Wade Cowan of Brownfield, Texas, ASA's Chairman, Ray Gasser of Corning, Iowa, and ASA's First Vice President, Richard Wilkins of Greenwood, Delaware. We're going to talk to you a little bit about the work that we've got going on this year, some of the successes that we've had in the past year, and our direction moving forward. Very quickly, though, I wanted to welcome all of you to Classic. I have some very preliminary numbers to report. We are up over 7,400 in terms of attendance. We are moving very quickly towards the record if we haven't eclipsed it already. We have already passed a record in terms of exhibitors. We have over 355 exhibitors this year, which is by far a record. So we very much appreciate you being here and helping us cover this event. And with that, to Wade Cowan, our president.
Good afternoon. Let me be one of the first to welcome you to the Southwest. Glad to see everybody last year in San Antonio and again this year in Phoenix. And it's 401 for me to go to San Antonio. It's 500 miles west to come out here this year. So I welcome you to the Desert Southwest. I farm in Brownfield, Texas. We raise several crops, and we also ranch and raise beef cattle. When you look back at 2014, we had a rather successful year considering how Congress has not been able to pass very many things. And so when we got the Farm Bill passed last year, the Waterways Bill that helped fund the infrastructure for waterways in the country, and then the crucial tax extenders, which included the 179 deductions for farmers along with the biodiesel tax credit, that was a great thing for agriculture, and it really helped. And we're glad that we were able to help move that ball forward. That said, we're not going to rest on our successes. We're going to move forward. We're going to become a more aggressive organization, and we're going to work with other farm organizations. And we're going to try to work to make the tax extenders bill that was passed this year permanent. As we move forward, we're going to focus a great deal on trade and on biotech. And to talk to you about biotech this afternoon, I'll introduce Ray Gasser.
Thanks, Wade. It's a pleasure to be here. And my name is Ray Gasser. I currently serve as chairman of the board of the American Soybean Association, and my family and I farm in southwest Iowa, and we grow soybeans and corn in that order. Corn's our rotational crop, I tell my corn friends. Anyway, so, you know, we talked a lot about, you know, biotechnology and the benefits of biotechnology, not only to agriculture but to our consumers. And it's really one of the top items on our list of things that we want to be aware of this year, and really having a GMO labeling plan that's workable for farmers and agriculture and our trade providers, but also gives our consumers and our citizens, you know, the information that they want and need is really important to us, and we're working really hard with our partners at GMA and our industry partners to make that happen and visiting with legislators and getting legislation that's workable. And Wade will talk about that a little bit more later, too. You know, so on biotechnology, the approval process, as we all know, has really been slowed down in the last several years. You know, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, we could get a new biotech trait through USDA and EPA in 12 or 15 months, and now it's 3 years plus. And it's a real concern to us in agriculture and our trait providers that we're, first of all, we're not giving our farmers the tools that they need to address the weed resistance issues, to address the yield issues, the climate issues that we see going on our farms. But it also is discouraging to our tech providers, you know, that, you know, they have a long time between developing the product and getting it approved, not only in the United States, but around the world. So one of the things that, you know, we're looking at and really working with our partners, with the export markets, with the trade providers, with our U.S. government, is a low-level presence policy, not only in the U.S. but around the world. And that's really a trade issue. And you know, it's really about allowing our products and allowing farmers to have those new tools that we need to grow and in minute amounts, at least, that it would still be able to trade around the world and not interrupt trade if our other trading partners haven't developed their approval process yet. So with that, I'd like to introduce Richard Wilkins, and he'll talk about trade.
Thank you, Ray. Yes, my name is Richard Wilkins. I'm the first vice president for American Soybean Association. I farm in Greenwood, Delaware, on the Delmarva Peninsula. We have the ability to be able to grow many crops there on Delmarva. So in addition to soybeans, we grow corn, we grow winter wheat, we grow feed grain barley, we grow triticale as a forage crop. We also grow vegetables for the processing industry, green peas, lima beans, snap beans, and sweet corn when we are able to get the contracts for that. But, you know, here at the American Soybean Association, we've always recognized that, international trade is the lifeblood for our commodity. Leaders that followed before us recognized that in order to expand the production of soybeans, we needed to have markets for that. So we've always had a keen interest in international trade. With at the present time, with the TPP, the TTIP, the possible opening up of trade with Cuba, the huge market potential that we have around the world, including the existing marketplace that we have with China, we have a lot of trade issues on our plate. In order to complete these free trade agreements, though, we need to get this trade promotion authority granted to the executive branch. That's a very priority issue for us right now. In order to be able to complete the negotiation of these free trade agreements, the negotiators need to know that they can assure their trading partners that once the deal is put into ink, that it can't be changed, that it can only be voted up and down by the Congress. So that's a crucial priority for us right now to get that completed and get Congress to grant that. We're extremely happy with the recent news about the settlement at the West Coast ports. It's very important for transportation infrastructure and for the flow of goods to be smooth and without interruption. And it's really great that they've come to a tentative settlement on that and that the port workers are back to work. And we really are exuberant about that. In recent months, there's been news about opening up trade again with Cuba. The actions that have already been taken should be able to ease some of the financial restrictions and the banking issues that have been a stumbling block for us to be able to increase our trade there. You know, for a neighbor that's only 90 miles from us, they would really be of great benefit to the Cuban citizens for them to be able to have access to our multitude of safe and nutritious food that we could really help the citizens and help our own farmers by ending the trade embargo there. With regard to the TTIP in Europe, the Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership, our beans are still subject to the sustainability requirements there. It's misfortunate that our beans are the sustainability of our beans are being based on the same sustainability standards for Brazilian beans. And we believe we have a much better life cycle analysis on our beans, and we're continuing to push that be recognized in any negotiations on a TTIP trade agreement, a reform of that look at the way the life cycle analysis is being done so that we can qualify better for the RED, Renewable Energy Directive. In Asia and along the Pacific Rim, we continue to see difficulties with Japan and the negotiations on the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Their insistence that five of their sacred commodities not be negotiated. Well, that's just not fair. When you're going to have a negotiation, that means that everything has to be on the table. And so we're continuing to insist that market access be granted not only for soybeans, but for the meat and poultry products and the dairy products and wheat that our other brethren in the farming community so dearly need access for those. We still face challenges in China. The approval process for new technology and innovative traits is broken. There's no predictability, and we are continuing to push for them to return to a systematic approach for reviewing scientific data and giving us access to our new innovative products. We hope that relationship continues. We really lean heavily upon that marketplace for our commodity of soybeans. At this point, I'd like to hand it back to Wade Cowan for a, a little more talk about our steps going forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Richard. As you've heard, we've got a lot on our plate. But I want to talk a little bit about what we do going forward. We're going to move forward in the next year, and we're going to try a brave initiative. We're going to work with every commodity group across the country, and we're going to try to work on the things that are a hindrance to every one of us in the ag community. And the first part that we look at is regulation. Government regulation up and down the scale in all sectors of the ag industry, whether it be the crop for soybeans or corn, or whether it be our animal agricultural partners or our oilseed processors. The regulations in the U.S. government increase the cost not only to us as producers, but it increases the cost to consumers as well. At EPA, we've got several things that we need to work at, and we need to work at it in a positive light. First of all is waters of the U.S. We know that we may not be able to do anything with EPA coming out with their ruling on that, but we're going to work continually with Congress to do what we can to help make sure that farmers are able to operate in the most free and effective way they can. Another thing that we have with EPA that always confuses me and kind of makes things strange to me is that they have the RVO standards, and they still have not brought those forward for 2014 or 2015. And as a lot of people have said in the past, I've heard it in my family for years, you know, that's no way to run a railroad. We don't need to have these levels of these things that are supposed to be out for the public to know and not have it, and we're already nearly 3 months into the new year and we still don't have 2014. Another thing is the new uses labels for chemicals. We have the technology and we have the ability to grow some new products to control weed resistance. We need EPA to move on these new uses so that we can use 2,4-D and dicamba. We all know that farmers are responsible producers and responsible citizens, and that we use those chemicals effectively for years, and there's no reason why we won't continue to do that moving forward. Another thing that we are going to do over the next year is we're going to try to couch all of our arguments in a positive light. This will be nowhere more apparent than our new stance on GMO labeling. We've too long been the organizations in ag that said, no, don't do this, don't do this. Now we'd like to present the consumer community with a positive outreach here. Our proposal and what we hope moves forward is a new dialogue that tells the consumers, we understand your needs and your wants to have knowledge of what's in your food. And the most effective way that we have found when we talk to consumers, whether they be college-age students or the woman in the grocery store, is it doesn't help them if they have a label that says from 1/10 to 100% is GMO and 99% of the things on the shelf would all have a GMO label. What's more effective is that we have a positive outlook and that we have a GMO label that is certified by USDA as non-GMO, and those companies and those people in the food chain that want to go into that market have the ability to label theirs as such. We believe this is a positive outlook and a positive message to the consumer. It allows them to have what they want. It allows companies that want to deal in non-GMO to go forward and produce the products that they feel the market needs, and that lets them bear the cost of that differential. And it lets the rest of the people know that whatever is labeled and is certified has no GMO in it, and then you can assume from there what you need to. But it's a good message to the consumer, and I hope it goes forward. We'll open it up now to any questions, and we thank you all for being here.
Jenny in the back.
Can you talk a little bit more about the low-level presence discussion and who you're working with where and where that is?
Yeah. So we've talked with our friends at the other commodities, first of all, but we've also talked with our exporters. We've talked to with our tech providers. You know, we've talked with the Grocery Manufacturers Association and bio, you know, about a process to do the low-level presence. Not only that, we've talked with our competitors who grow soybeans around the world, and they would like to do the same effort. It would really benefit all of us to maybe circumvent some of the efforts to restrict trade. You know, if we had a trade approved in the United States and maybe not improved in one of the other countries, we could still grow those new products here with a limited amount, and maybe, you know, I don't know the percent yet, but a small amount of the trait in a shipload of soybeans, and still not be rejected in the country of import. Yeah, they're by government. We will be working with. We are all concentrating on an effort to develop the low level presence first in the U.S.
So it's still kind of a discussion phase.
Still in a discussion phase, but there's a lot of people realizing that's the direction we need to go.
Chris, you had your hand up.
Well, it's been discussed, and it's kind of the new model that GMA has looked at in this new Congress and the new bill that might be brought forward. We hope would be brought forward. We can't spend the money and the time and the effort on doing this, and you know it's a losing argument when you say consumers don't have the right to know what's in their food. And what we want them to know is what they want to know is if they have the opportunity to buy food that is free of GMOs. And so if we turn this message positive, where yes, you can have the right to know what's GMO free, but the most efficient and effective way is to have a USDA certification that says we certify that this has no GMO in it, because otherwise it's like I said earlier, you've got a program where they want to label, and you know, if you look at the state initiatives that have come through, they're so widely varying. There's an exception for this, there's an exception for that. You don't really know. You just get a bunch of labels on the shelf, and it really means nothing to you. And so we're hopeful that and we'll have some discussions later today with the other farm commodity groups, and hopefully that this is a message that catches fire and goes forth in the U.S. and we put this issue behind us.
Of course, Cindy.
Yeah, I understand that Secretary Vilsack said something yesterday about having labeling by smartphone. You could use smartphones to find out about what's in their food. I want to know if you've heard about that,
Yeah, that's actually a proposal that he has actually floated before. It would be a registry that the food companies, if I am stating it correctly, it's a registry that the food companies could populate. It is certainly an approach, and one that we would need to consider. It's something that, you know, we feel that the effort that we've signed on to with the other commodity groups, with GMA, is the way to go for us. That said. There's a lot of validity to what the secretary is saying. So it is something that would provide that as well, and most importantly too, be voluntary. And I think the common thread to all of these things is that it's a voluntary approach. It's not a mandated. The real strength of it though is that it is one single standard at the national level, and so that really I think is the selling point for a lot of these arguments. Any other questions in the front?
Question on the labeling again. What about the argument?
Because there's a market segment out there that there's basically, and I can't take credit for it, Sonny Beck come up with what he called a three silo system, and that's really what there is in the country right now. There's those growers that are purely organic, and they have an organic certification program, and that program has worked effectively. And so now this would put in another level. Maybe you don't want to be in the organic food market. You don't want to, it's probably an in-between market where it's non-GMO. You know, it allows farmers to use the technology. It allows the market to dictate what is what price level there are for the different grades of a commodity. You can go all the way to what would be a pure organic, or you can go to a grade that would be GMO free, and you would know that it's totally GMO free, or you can go to the market, and it allows the market to give the signal not only to us as producers but to the consumer as what monetary value there are on those markets, because what this envisions is that this non-GMO may be actually a middle ground that's not as expensive or as organic. It just depends on what the market demands, but it does give the market that niche in there that people are saying that they need and that people are asking for, and so it's a good fit for everybody in the food chain, whether you're producing it or whether you're consuming it, so that they know what they're able to get in their food.
So in addition to that, none of those programs will really work without a low-level presence policy. And, you know, we don't want to give the opinion that ASA does not support biotech, because we're really highly supportive of biotech and the tools that our farmers need and really that benefit everyone around the world. But without a low-level presence, you know, zero is not possible. Zero tolerance is not possible, and so we have to have a low-level presence policy to make any of these things work.
Yeah, we're coming up against ours, so I take one more, and then we'll get the rest out in the hallway. So, Mike and Chad, I'll get you out in the hallway.
Wade, you mentioned the Farm Bill as an accomplishment. I've been in a couple of committee meetings the last 2 days, and both places said they were feeling like they were having to defend the Farm Bill and the crop insurance. Is that a concern?
Yes, it's a big concern. You know, the one thing that I think that's happened over the first part of this Congress is that we did have Representative Conaway from the House Ag Committee send a letter to the budget chairman stating that agriculture and the the insurance subsidies should not be touched. We're in an atmosphere of budget cuts and restraints, and Everybody's under the gun, especially if you're a discretionary spending item, and so we're going to have to defend that. We've always got to be out there. We've got to be in front. We've got to be supportive. I think we have an excellent argument that agriculture has taken real dollar cuts all the way back to 2000. We certainly took it in this last Farm Bill, and we must have a safety net, because to have the problem that you could have without any safety net, which is what the subsidies do in insurance, then you can cause a major hit on the economy really quick on something that no one had any control over, and that's a weather event. Living in West Texas in this last 4 years of drought, I can testify to that personally.
So again, we'll take additional comments that you have. We're happy to take them out in the hall, but we've come up against our time. So thank you very much.